We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Lindholm through Zacha. Harrison to York. And the Flyers pull out a dramatic victory. Boston came from behind to tie twice in the third period. But Tyson Forster had the winner with a 1:29 to go. 3-2 Philly.
Welcome into Sunday Skate. I'm your host, Scott McLaughlin, with Andrew Razor-Raycroft and Bridget Prue. Nico behind the glass for us. As you just heard from Jack Edwards there, Bruins lose to the Flyers 3-2 on Saturday. You got to give the Bruins and Flyers this. They do have a knack for playing entertaining third periods.
Yep. We're not necessarily starting out so entertaining,
no.
But...
yeah, so a week ago Saturday at the Garden, they combined for 7 goals in the third period. Bruins hung on to win that one, 6-5. Yesterday, as you alluded to, pretty dull first 40 minutes, especially for the Bruins.
I don't know how many times Jack said, bring some coffee. I don't know if he's talking about for Brad Marchand or for himself or what. But yeah, I mean, it's a 1 p.m. start.
It is, but... can't be an excuse, especially so what gets me about yesterday is coming off Thursday night against the Rangers, where again another game that they hung around, and I guess if you wanted to say, hey, it's encouraging you can hang around even when you don't have your A game, but that wasn't a great effort against the Rangers on Thursday. Jim Montgomery said as much after that game, said they didn't check well enough, they didn't compete for pucks hard enough. Said he was surprised and disappointed. And then you come out Saturday against the Flyers, less than 48 hours later, and you're still kind of just hitting the snooze button for 2 periods. Finally wake up. They, as we heard from Jack, they tie it twice in the third period, but give the Flyers the lead right back both times. So back-to-back losses as we sit here on a Sunday morning. We know still in great shape playoff-wise, but 10 games to go. I don't know about you guys. I would like to see more consistency. I'd like to see some 60-minute efforts start to pile up instead of having back-to-back games where, 20-minute effort, 30-minute effort. What do we call on that?
I think we're still a little bit away from getting there where it's necessary. You still have a month to go till the NHL playoff starts. A really long time. A lot of hockey still to be played. I think you can understand why and how these games, like yesterday afternoon, the 1 o'clock start, the Flyers needing it, the Bruins just, I agree. You need a little bit more. I think the good news is, this is the way I think about it. Do I think that Brad Marchand isn't going to be able to bring it and doesn't really understand what it takes in game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs? No, I don't have an issue with that. I don't think David Pastrnak's going to have an issue in game one. I don't have an issue with Charlie Coyle figuring out in game one or Charlie McAvoy. And we're seeing Brazo, we're seeing Geeky, we're seeing Heinen play really good hockey right now. Those are the guys that need to get cranking, and those are the guys that need to continue to build their games. Brad's struggling. He's a big difference maker for this group. He needs to get the 400th goal to get over it. It's in his head. He's thinking about it nonstop. You can tell he's frustrated. He's been nicked up 4 or 5 games in a row where you're like, oh, this could be a week injury. This could be a 2-week injury. And he's battling through that. So I think that's a big part of the consistency, or and or the that one extra goal that they've needed. Don't they also won 4-3 in a row or 4 in a row before the Rangers game too against pretty good hockey teams. So it's like I just think it's a little I'm not taking any a zero grain of salt against the Philadelphia Flyers at a 1 o'clock game a month before playoffs still.
Yeah, and I maintain what I said about opponents that you feel safe if the Bruins do draw Philadelphia in the first round. I still didn't see anything I would be particularly afraid of. I mean, obviously, we know they beat the Bruins twice they beat the Bruins this time in a close game, but I don't think they're too much to worry about, right? Like, if we're talking about who they draw, I think that was kind of an off night for the Bruins, and that you hope that in the playoffs the desperation looks different for Boston. And to talk about Brad Marchand, I thought that he might get one yesterday because he was so mad. Like, when he plays mad like that, because he got that knee on knee.
Yeah, he was either going to score or he was going to get fined by the NHL. It was something, because I was thinking
same
thing. Or
yeah.
All, or... Yeah, that was... He's frustrated. He's really... He's very frustrated. And he's done this the last few years at this time of year where he's gone cold. He has, and he's been able to turn it on. So, again, that guy's the least of my worries or anyone else's worries. And I think that he is worth that difference come, you know, give him another 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we did see this last year from him where I remember we're on this show having conversations about, hey, is Marchand right? Is he going to be able to get right by the playoffs? And he was the least of their problems in that series, mm-hmm. So that's fair. I'm not overly concerned about Brad Marchand. Two guys I will say, like, I want to really see get on top of their games would be on defense, Charlie McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm, who I think are just so important to whatever this team's going to do. And McAvoy, I thought, took a step in the right direction yesterday. I would not go as far. Jim Montgomery said he was dynamite. I don't think I'd go quite that far. But I think McAvoy had been struggling a little bit prior to this, prior to yesterday. Lindholm's, you know, when he first came back from his injury, I thought he played really well. I thought he came back really strong. And then I think you've seen a little drop off here recently. And Razy, you're right. Like, there's still a month, but it's also just 10 games. And I feel like right now is the time to me, like, starting with this trip to Florida coming up, because just look at the opponents. Panthers, Lightning, Capitals still desperate, but not overly worried about the Capitals. Predators, one of the hottest teams in the NHL right now. Hurricanes again. Hurricanes, Panthers, Hurricanes again. Like, that's, if you don't pick it up for this stretch, then I think you could potentially hit like a real slump, you know, 2-6 type of thing. So, and you don't want that going to the playoffs. You only have 3 games after this tough part of the schedule. So that you really don't want going to the playoffs. So I would say if they ramp it up now, then fine. You look back at these 2 games, you say, all right, that was the last little blip before the playoffs, all good. But if they play the way that they've been playing these last couple of games through this next stretch, then I worry about losses starting to pile up, and then it becomes a real problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to lose 2 more in a row. I'd almost guarantee it. When you're playing Tampa and Florida back-to-back, which...
Well, but it shouldn't be these two. Like, it shouldn't... It can't get to 4 losses in a row.
Why not? It could. It really could. Sure it could. But it's not going to matter on April 19th. That's my point. It won't. It really won't. They need to play better. They're going to up their ante. They're going to have great games. We're going to see some great hockey either way. It's just where they're at in their season and where they're at in their careers and where they're at in the organization's cycle. It's all about April 19th, and they need to get better. They need to find ways to tighten things up defensively. They need to find way. You hear it from the coaches. I want to hear it. Like, whatever the coaches are saying, I think that's kind of they have a very good handle on the inflection points with this team. And if they're frustrated after a Ranger game, but not after a Philly game, I think that's pretty sensible. I think we're going to, again, if they, My only point with the wins and losses kind of thing is like it's really tough to go down to Florida and win back to back, and like I'm not sure who's doing that, but most teams aren't. Then they've got 3-4 and they come home. Fortunately, they come home through all of this, and so Washington's kind of a one off. They're going to win games. They're going to lose some games. Is my point. It's not. I'm not focused on like a 4-game streak or a 5-game winning streak. I'm just saying. They need to continue to develop their game. They need to continue to build. And you're not going to hear them be concerned about wins and losses, I guess is my point. You're going to hear them be concerned about getting their lineup right, who's playing defense in game one, where's the goaltending at, where are the forward situation, the power play, how are all these things progressing? And I think we have to believe that the coaching staff and that the players have this plan in place, whether it's winning or a loss. I think that they do have that in place. They have an idea of how they want to work these last 10 games. And I love the fact they have 10 games and the Toronto Maple Leafs have 13 games left. That's a huge boom. That's a huge boom for this group to have that extra rest. No one's played more games than the Bruins, and they're going to get the most rest down the stretch. I think that's really favorable for them.
Yeah, they're going to get the most rest. They're going to get the most practice time if they need to work on things before the playoffs start. We heard Jim Montgomery talk about that before the game yesterday. And you're talking about the game plan for the next 10 games or the last 10 games, Razor, and it sounded like the rotation is the plan in terms of goaltending for the last 10 games. I don't know if you had anything that you want to see from goaltending in this last stretch of the season. What do you want to see from them improving and what you think of the game plan for them?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, I know they're going to do the rotation. That's what they do. I think it might deviate a couple games here or there. If one of them plays a little better than the other, you might see two games in a row. And you know what they're going to do? I know what they're going to do for sure is that at some point they're going to pump fake everybody and they're going to give everybody a 2 games in a row. And I'm going to have to sit here on Sunday morning. We're going to have to talk about rotation and how, because it's going to be a Thursday, Saturday where they're going to play one of them 2 times in a row. And we're going to have this big thing. So they're going to do it. They're going to switch off the rotation just because Monty said they're basically going to rotate. So he's just going to stir it up a little bit by going back to back at some point. I think he says stuff to keep people off guard more than everyone thinks.
Really?
I think he does play that a little bit. We've done that with the injuries a few times where it's like, oh, yeah, he'll be back. And then it's like a week and a half.
Yeah.
Lindholm, oh, yeah, he'll, you know, day to day. He's like 5-8 missed 8 games.
So Forbert.
There's some of this, you know, so there's some of the New England Patriots still in that building where you're not really sure what's going on. I think the rotation remark the other day is some of that. You want to see one of them. You want to see one of them grab it, but I don't think it matters anyways. You know, we're going to be talking about it. I think, again, I want to see the D get set. I think I want to see the special teams get a little more set, the PK get a little more set in how they're playing. But again, it is. I know it's 10 games, but it's also a long month. It really is still a long month in the season, right? Like, it's a long way still.
Yeah, so first I've just declared, like, I guess I'm not as concerned about wins losses either. If you tell me they go down to Florida and put together, you know, 60-minute effort or nearly 60-minute effort against Panthers and or Lightning, but they lose, like, that's fine. The last time they played the Lightning, I thought they brought a 60-minute effort, yeah, and they lost.
Yeah.
Vasilevsky played great. Like, if you tell me that happens, like, okay, I can live with that. I just don't want to see yesterday where, you know, you kind of sleepwalk through the first 2 periods. I want to see the 60-minute efforts start to pile up.
Yep.
On the goaltending, I do think even if they deviate a little and give someone back-to-back starts but then go back to the other guy, I feel like that still kind of tells us, you know, the plan's going to be to use both in the playoffs, whether it's a strict rotation or, you know, 2 starts on, go to the other guy, or maybe stretch to 3, but I really don't think they're going to – I just don't think they're setting themselves up to ride someone for an entire series or even 5 games in a row. It just doesn't really feel that way to me. And, you know, maybe Montgomery was fibbing a little last week in Montreal when, you know, I asked him that directly, you know, can you rotate right to the end and then ride a guy? And he kind of sounded like they didn't want to do that, or they kind of learned from last year that that didn't work. So maybe that was, you know, little misdirection too, but I get the sense that that kind of is what they're actually thinking is, like, if you're going to rotate or you're going to split till the end, don't then expect to ride one guy the whole way. It just, it doesn't seem like it's setting up for that to me.
No, and we're going to play the audio from Montgomery about this pregame yesterday, because he did, three different times really sounded very strongly for the rotation. We'll play that coming out of the next break. But what he said that I thought was the most interesting part of it was, I don't see a reason to change it up. And if you're, if you don't see a reason to change it up and you're making these comments publicly, then you do that in the playoffs and you ride one guy, you're opening yourself up to the criticism again from the fan base. Like, what you said, you were willing to do this. You said you don't see a reason to change it, and then you change it.
Well, I think he's very acutely aware he's getting criticized if they lose
either
the
way.
First round either way.
Yes.
He's not too worried about it.
True. So, yeah, some more goaltending thoughts. I want to get Razor's thoughts on Ullmark's game yesterday, and specifically the last two goals he let in. Play of Swayman recently. You mentioned defense pairings, stuff to get into there. We're off and running on Sunday Skate. You can call in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. Bridget has you trending, and we'll be back after the spring.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Assuming you keep this goalie rotation through the rest of the regular season, when you get into the playoffs, there's always been this tradition that you've got to pick a guy and it's got to be one guy you can ride with. Are we at the era now where you can alternate come playoff time the way you would regular season time?
I do. I think you can, because that's what we're used to. That's what their bodies are used to. So
it makes a lot of sense.
Your current plan here, tomorrow there'll be 10 games to go. Your plan would be alternate to the end?
Yeah, I don't see a reason to change it up.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. I'm Scott McLaughlin. That's Bruins coach Jim Montgomery talking about the idea of rotating goalies. I actually agree with all of that, and that's exactly how I feel. But Razor, you think possibly some misdirection there, or maybe just not totally playing his hand?
I'm not holding anybody to anything what they say about playoff time on March 24th. That's all.
You don't think you can read into it at all? Not even a little bit?
No,
no,
of course not. It's
not
March 24th. No, it's going to be a thing all the way through. If they rotate, I can't wait for the game four rotation talk of who's playing game five. So that's not changing, right? Like we can all say that, right? Like we can, we're not going to talk about goaltending. If they say game one, we're rotating all the way through. So then we're not talking about goaltending, right? Because it's just going to be a rotation. We're not going to talk about who's going in, who's playing well, who's not playing well, right? Is that how that's going to work?
Not.
What are we talking about?
My take has never been that strict. Like I'm realistic about this. You know, I don't think like you have to stick to every other game, no matter what happens, and you never change it for anything. Like I'm flexible.
But that's the rotation, though. That's what Montgomery just told us is that their bodies are used to it. Why would we switch? That's what they are.
But I think whatever your plan is going into the playoffs, you have to be flexible enough to adjust as things change. And that would go, even if you're riding one goalie, if he doesn't play well, you got to be ready to make a switch. You can't just say, well, he's our guy. And even though, you know, he's given up 15 goals in three games, we're sticking with him. Like that goes for your lines. You got to be willing to change those up. You got to be willing to move guys in and out. Move someone on or off the top power play unit. So there has to be some flexibility. I'm not strict. It has to be every other game. But I think you can start that way, and I think if both guys play well, you can ride that for as long as that remains true.
Oh, yeah. If you go up, you know, if you go up 3-1, let's say, in a series, and your goaltenders are playing great.
You have such an
great,
evil smile on your face right
then,
now.
Then, yeah, why would
see.
You change anything, right? Why would you change anything if everything's going perfect after a 3-1 lead in a series? I agree 100% with
that. No, you don't.
I do agree. You don't change anything. You don't change anything. Well, one guy played 3-4 games last year, and they were up 3-1. You wouldn't change anything. Of course not.
See?
It's not that I don't, I guess my point is with all of this, and like I'm sarcastic about it and kind of laughing about it, I hope it doesn't come across as like, I know and you don't know, because I don't know anything. And that's why I'm like kind of going along with this in this way.
Nico, make sure you clip that.
Yeah, please do. I don't know anything. What I do know is it's not that easy and it's not that cut and dry. That's what I hear in my head is when everyone says, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying everybody, because it's not, it's a lot. It's a big, huge swell of fans and media and people that say rotation. And I feel like they say it because they think it's easier. And my point is that it's actually harder and not as easy when you're dealing with a rotation come anytime. So yes, it works in the regular season. Yes, they've been able to play off of it. But I know that the playoffs are different and it gets heightened and it's not as easy. And I feel like the reason why people say rotation is to make it easier and to make this team better, because it's easier just to rotate the goalies and they don't have to make decisions and that's just what they do. That's what I hear when I hear rotation, when I hear those questions being asked. I just put up a bit of a wall on it because I know it's really difficult to do it that way. That's what I do know. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know a lot of things, but I know as a goaltender how playoff series is run, that staying you're going to do a rotation and sticking to the rotation is very difficult.
I just wonder in the room.
And it's why it's never, ever, ever been done in the modern day game of hockey.
Yeah.
Not Jerry Cheever's 72. Let's not do that. Let's talk about within the last 25 years of hockey. It hasn't happened.
So my question is, just because like you have this perspective from being in the room, when you were playing, how would it affect you if you were in a rotation where you thought you were playing well enough to get in? Like, how would you feel if you either were the guy who had to sit out the series, even though you've been playing pretty much 50-50? How would you feel to be the guy on the outside of it when it wasn't what you did the whole year?
Well, it doesn't matter, right? Like, feelings don't matter.
But then you have to come in game
six.
Well,
no, then, yeah. Well, how does it feel to hear that you're getting traded? And then you have to come in and play. And you play pretty good for four games straight. Like, that's part of the business. The feelings don't matter. Like, I could give you a million guys that I played with in the playoffs that play 82 games. And then Charlie McAvoy comes up and plays great. Or some call-up comes up and he's playing game one. And you have to go to your fourth-line buddy and be like, dude, that sucks. I can't believe that they just took you out for this whole time. And
Phil Kessel last year in Vegas.
Played
all 82 regular season games, played I think two playoff games.
That was a tough call.
Yeah. So that happens all, like, it just does. And the goaltending, you're going to feel horrible. You will feel horrible. But if everything's going great, then you sit and watch and cheer them on. And then when you're taken out or when you're put in, you have to play great and try your best. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, a Hall of Famer, it happens and it, as a team, as a coach, as a player, those feelings go out the door come playoff time.
I have a question on the flip side too.
Uh-huh.
If you have been splitting the net 50-50 and then you are told you're the guy, does that put a lot of pressure on you if you haven't done it the whole season?
No, that's what you want. That's why you're playing as hard as you can every other night to get that opportunity. Maybe the bodies feel different. I never did a strict rotation, but I've played a bunch of games in a row and felt fine. I don't know how I don't put a lot of stock in that. Maybe there's more to the science nowadays than I know, but I would if you gave me the option to rotate or to play every single game, I'm taking every single game every single time.
Yeah, I would say any goalie is going to be a championship goalie is going to have to overcome feelings, getting banned. Like, I think of even here, Tim Thomas wins the Vezina in 2009, loses the job to Tuukka Rask down the stretch in 2010, doesn't play that whole postseason, has the mental strength to come back, win the Vezina and the Stanley Cup and the Conn Smythe again the next year. Like, you got to figure out a way. So
stop the puck.
Yeah. So for me, I don't want a rotation because I think it's easier. Like, I'm totally with you. It's not easier. It's hard no matter what. I don't think it's more difficult, though, because I think when you have – I've made this point before. I think when you have two really good goalies, if plan A doesn't work perfectly, it's difficult no matter what. And I think we saw that last year where, okay, like, you could flip that and say picking Ullmark and going with him might have been quote-unquote easier than continuing the rotation. Well, yeah, it was easier until that overtime goal in Game 5 – and then he struggles in Game 6, and now it becomes – now you have a really difficult decision. So I think no matter what, if you have two good goalies, there's going to be questions about who's playing, who should play, when do you make a switch. So, yeah, it's not easier, but I don't – in this case with these two goalies, I don't think it's any more difficult either.
The other thing too, right, is, and I think this is really important to realize as well, is that every Stanley Cup goalie, every team that wins a Stanley Cup, they have a lot of bad games within those 27 games that it takes to win, right? Like there's a Tim Thomas, he was down 0-2 in the first round, he played horrible in the first round against Montreal, right? Like, he came up with the wins in game 7, but he played bad. He did. And they almost all got fired. They almost all got gassed. The whole thing, if that goes the other way in game 7, it's a completely, the whole franchise is different. He played bad in the first round. Vasilevsky's played bad in different times winning Stanley Cups, as great as he is. Patrick Waugh was bad. So that's the thing that we all have to remember, too, is that goalies are going to play bad and win the Stanley Cup at certain times. You could even have a two-game bad streak as a Stanley Cup winning goaltender. And that's what makes game-to-game, minute-to-minute decisions difficult, because you're going to have guys play bad. So you say Ullmark was bad in Game 6. Well, yeah, there's lots of goalies that have won Stanley Cups that were bad in Game 6s of series and still won the Stanley Cup or still won that series. So that's the other part to remember, is that you're not, just because you rotate, you're not getting a great effort every single time from these guys. Just all of a sudden, now no one can play bad two games in a row, or these guys can't play bad three games in a row. That can still happen as well, and the best work through it.
Yeah, I do think it cuts down on potential wear and tear, though. Like, I do think that these guys are in this rhythm of, they're playing every other game, so they're used to, you know, having start 3 days until their next start, and their bodies are in that rhythm, and it's worked. Like, it's, for the most part, you know, we can talk about some recent struggles, which we can get into, but for the most part, it's kept both of them at a pretty high level, and that part, I think, can carry into the playoffs. Like, I think if you're giving these guys, kind of keeping them on a similar kind of rest schedule and recovery, you can keep them, in theory, at peak performance, versus if you ride one of them for 6, 7, 8 straight games, which they haven't done in the regular season, you kind of risk what I think. I know they tried to say at the end of the series, Ullmark was healthy. He said he was fine. I think there was pretty clearly some wear and tear there. You do risk that if you start to increase the workload to a point that they're not used to. And that's the other thing, is like, neither one of these guys has been a playoff workhorse where they've started every game for 3 rounds. Like, neither one of them has that kind of deep run on their resume. I mean, you did it with Tuukka Rask because he had that on his resume. He had done that several times, you know, started every game for long playoff runs. So even later in his career, when you started to lighten his workload in the regular season and, you know, get him down to 50, 55 games, whatever it was, you still knew he had reached that level before. He had gotten to a point where he could play at a high level for several playoff series in a row, you know, despite what some fans think. Tuukka Rask did do that. That did actually happen.
Don't get the Tuukka callers,
yeah.
Please.
These guys haven't done that, so you don't, like, we don't know that they're actually capable of that.
No, we don't, but if I would, if you ask them, Mr. Swim and Mr. Omar, do you think you could take this team and play 25 games over 52 days and
sure.
win the Stanley Cup?
I think
the answer is
I would
be?
Hope they're confident enough in themselves to
correct.
Say that.
And to answer a question with a question, I suppose, is if so, what contract are you giving these guys? Well, what if they can't do that? What you're giving Swayman 7-8 years, $7 million to rotate through the playoffs for the next 8 years? Because he can't, like, what? How do you know what you have? And how do you know? So that's dangerous to say too. That's all. That's just the conversation goes around and around, I feel like, a little
bit. It goes around and around because none of us are budging.
Well, no, yeah, no, for sure. I'm not, and yeah.
All right, so let me push it forward a little bit since you just mentioned this. Because I've heard this, right, all year it looked like this was going to be Jeremy Swayman's year. And if they were going to ride anyone, it was going to be Swayman. Now it's gotten a little more muddled because Ullmark has been better recently. There's, you know, even... I would say since the All-Star break, but even if you just want to keep it to the last week or two, it's clearly been the hotter hand recently. There seems to be some people who are like, still want to go with Swayman no matter what, because it's his time and you have to see what you have before you give him the next contract.
Yeah.
Does that factor in at all? Like, can you at all think, well, we need to see what Jeremy Swayman can give us if we ride him? Because we have to make this decision about his next big contract, or can you only are you only focused on the here and now, what's best right now, and if that means Swayman doesn't play at all in the playoffs, then so be it.
I mean, you're trying to win now. Like, you're not saying, oh, we got to find out what we need to give him. Like, obviously the contract thing with him, they've pushed it and they've pushed it and they've pushed it, and it doesn't seem like. What they're going to learn is going to just be what's best for the team, right? They're going to have to use the sample size that they have and what works best in the playoffs. I mean, who knows? Maybe he steps up and has some incredible wins or leads, you know, stands on his head in the playoffs. But you can't do it just because you're like, yeah, we need to determine our next 8 years right now. No, you need to determine each game, each series on its own.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen for sure. That does get separated, church and state, at this time of year, and it's just a matter of getting it done. Now, the player doesn't necessarily separate that. The player has that in the back of their head somewhere that if I'm not playing in the playoffs, then I'm not going to get paid as much money. That's very cut and dry in hockey. If you're not playing in the playoffs, whether you're a center, wing, defenseman, you're not getting paid as much as what the guy who is playing does. That's
well, but sometimes in a contract year, players play way better. Then they get the big contract and you see a drop off. It's like, okay, if Swayman does get in and he's playing for a contract, like he's like,
oh,
this
yeah.
is my opportunity 100%. To lock myself in for a long-term deal with a price that I like. So sometimes people do play better in a contract year, and then sometimes the contracts don't pan out to that because you're paying them based off of this incredible year they had, knowing they needed to be at their best.
Yeah, which, that happens more than not, yeah. really.
Which Swayman had been doing until quite recent. Like, he was an all-star for a reason. He deserved that. He's still, even with a recent skid, a top 5 or 6 goalie on the season. So before we get to our next break in a few minutes, got to take Maria. I've made Maria wait longer than usual. Good morning, Maria.
No, it's good morning. It's well worth waiting. This is really good conversation. And you know, I appreciate all the insight that all of you have because clearly you follow the team a lot more deeply than I do. But I, in fact, am getting worried only because I continue to see the same kind of chronic patterns in the losses that are very troubling to me now with so little time left in the season. These aren't small sample sizes at this point where we're seeing, you know, a lack of emotion sometimes, a lack of pushback, the inability to play a full 60 minutes, the inability to make a strong play on the puck in your defensive zone, and now we're having some hiccups on the part of our goaltending. So, you know, I know that there are going to be losses, and I can appreciate that, but my view has been all along, it's not the loss, it's how you lose, and I think that's what worries me moving forward into the playoffs. And I need to get this off my chest with regard to yesterday's call on Brad Marchand. And I, myself, am sick and flippin' tired of the NHL officials treating Brad Marchand like he's still a common criminal. What was done to him yesterday was so egregious, so embarrassing, so blatant that those officials need to be called out publicly, fined, suspended. I don't care what you do to them. But that was so blatant, and what happened to him was so dangerous, that knee-on-knee check. If the roles were reversed, Marchand would have likely been immediately tossed from that game, and we'd all be worrying about how many games he was going to be suspended for. And let me just say this, too, about Coach Montgomery. Say what you will about John Tortorella, like him or not, but at least he shows emotion, and he backs his players up. And that's what I wanted to see from Monty. I don't care if the refs throw you out of the game. I don't care if the league fines you. Stick up for your captain in that instance. Thank you for the time, folks.
Thanks, Maria. Yeah, that definitely worth touching on that Marchand knee in the penalty call. On Tortorella, I'll say, you know, does he have his players back? Because he just benched his captain, Sean Couturier, for two games this past week, and maybe he explained it behind the scenes. He certainly didn't publicly. But yeah, so Marchand yesterday, as Maria alluded to, for people who might have missed it or just to refresh, tries to step around an Eric Johnson check in the neutral zone. I don't think Johnson was intentionally trying to knee him. I don't think he's a dirty player, but he does leave his leg out there, and it winds up being knee on knee. No call. Marchand a little slow to get up. And then loses it on the refs and you know, goes a little berserk from the bench. And he winds up getting penalized. And, Razor, I know on Nesson, on the intermission show, guys were talking about, you know, you want to see the ref come over and calm him down, give him a warning. We didn't see that. You know, maybe it happened from afar. But what did you think of how that all played out and how it was handled by the officials?
What they miss the knee. That's yeah. You know, that's the problem. They miss the knee. Whether it's and whether the judgment of did he try and do, you know, Johnson's been around a long time, and you know, whether it's a major, whether it's a game misconduct, whether it's a match, whether it's 2 minutes, whether it's form, whatever you call, you have to call something there. Because if you call something, it just deflates everything. You're not worried about it the rest of the game. The refs have to see that. They have to call it nowadays. Of all the. And I think at this point in the game, we would all and the players would be very happy to see that one called. That's maybe not quite a penalty. That's so close that it's hard to see, but at least they're getting ahead of it on the knee rather than the hook or the random slash that they call. That's not even close behind the play. That has nothing to do with anything that they call seven times a week throughout the league. This is the one where players would appreciate being called, even if it wasn't quite a knee, but it was really close to a knee. Okay, give me a penalty for that. I'll take that. Or now I know that's where the line is. So that's where it starts and ends for me, is that they just blew the call. After that, anything goes because the players are fired up. And, you know, if you want to give Brad a 2-minute, you know, unsportsmanlike, that's fine, but it should have been, and it wouldn't have been unsportsmanlike if they had called a penalty and talked about it, Brad wouldn't have been able to go crazy. He gets up, realizes his leg hurts, looks around, no arm up, then he loses his mind. So that's reasonable.
Yeah, in terms of player safety, I think players around the league would be happier to set a precedent that you don't even go near the potential to go knee on knee like that. So like trying to get it out of the game in terms of player safety is important. And it brings me back to something that comes up a lot when you're talking about the officials in the NHL. I always end up comparing it to college hockey, because in college hockey, Scott and I and you, we were all at the Hockey East Championship game last night. What happens when you think you see a dirty play? Get the whistle, you know, ends a play. You say to the refs, you want to challenge this for five. We want to see if this is a major. And they look at it. And sometimes it's no penalty at all. You lose the challenge, but other times you are able to call attention to a dangerous play and it ends up after review being a 5-minute major. And I know you don't want to do that all the time, but in college hockey, I think that player safety is better, and it seems like to be more of a focus than in the NHL, because they're willing to talk about protecting their players with reviews after. When a guy comes to the bench and says, "Coach, I just got elbowed in the face. Like, someone just contacted me in the head." You look at it. You get it right.
Well, yeah. It's also easier to challenge in college, too, because you only lose a timeout. Like, you're not getting a penalty if you lose it. So, yeah, I think the NHL has to be better on it. And, you know, the thing is there is, like, if they call it a major, then you can review it and potentially reduce it. So maybe you say, like, "Hey, just to err on the side of caution, you know, call." But to Ray's point, like, they just completely missed it. You know,
yeah, they didn't call anything.
Like, even...
Which in college hockey isn't a problem because you can review it.
Yeah. Like, even worst case, they, you know, could have called a trip just
That's right. To
be something. So,
If the ref's arm goes up, Brad doesn't lose it. He's not, like, he lost it right away because he sees that there's no arm up. Then he loses it. It wasn't like he waited to hear what the explanation was and then he lost it. He was losing it because he couldn't believe that there wasn't a penalty called.
Right. And do you think, and this is another thing Scott and I were talking about because of this whole, like, 5-minute, like, review for a 5-minute major thing yesterday, was, do you think that the NHL should do what college does and you don't have to get a misconduct if you get a 5-minute major? Because in college hockey, you can just get the five, and you're serving the penalty in the box. You come out, you play the rest of the game. It doesn't always attach to getting ejected.
Yeah, that was weird the other night, I think. I think at the NHL level, I feel like if you're doing something that's bad enough to get a major, then you should probably just be out of the game. And also, don't forget...
But don't you think it makes refs more, like, less likely
Don't forget what happens. If somebody does do something for a major in the NHL, then he has to fight someone after. You don't have to fight anybody in college hockey after the game. So, like, that getting that guy out of the game typically diffuses the whole situation with a 5-minute major. If you give someone a 5-minute major, he stays in the game. Guess who's, you know, Ryan Reeves is chasing him around the ice the rest of the
night. Do you think that's how it should be, though?
No, because that's buffoonery at this point. Yeah. Like, we already have enough of that at times, you know, because someone lays a real normal body check on somebody, then he's getting chased around the rest of the game. Like, I think we're past that, unfortunately.
All right, we got to catch a break here. Call in 617-779-7937. We'll be back with more Sunday Skate after this.
Hey, Razor, I told you I was going to call into the hockey show a couple weeks ago before I left on vacation.
Oh, yeah. It's called Sunday Skate.
The show where they talk about hockey.
He still hasn't called in yet.
No.
Do you think we need to give him the number?
He's not. Yeah. Well, someone's gonna have to text him because he's not listening. So.
First, you'd have to figure out the name of the show, and then maybe we could expect him to call after that. I'm just gonna start adding him when Scott tweets out the tune in 9 to 11 Sunday Skate. I'm just gonna be like at Christian Fourier. You gonna call today?
He's so confused.
Yeah.
But I see Nico on the phone. What's the chances?
Is this Christian? No. He says no.
Zero.
Of course not. It's probably never going to happen. All right. I don't see it happening.
I think playoffs. I think he's waiting for playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
I think he's waiting for Razor to make him mad enough. Like, if you poke his buttons enough on one of the Friday shows that you call into, you might get him.
Yeah, I'll keep going. I'll keep poking that bear.
All right, so we got a couple texts here on the text line, 37937. First off, called us clowns. So that's very nice. you guys are clowns for saying, no, we aren't scared of this team. They need to be scared of everyone. They're not as good as their record.
Wait, I think they're talking about me because I said I'm not afraid of the Flyers.
Listen, maybe I'm not a clown because I actually like mostly agree with that. I'm not looking past anyone if I'm the Bruins or taking any series for granted. Like,
no.
I'll sit here and say, you know, I think they, whether it's Toronto, Philly, Washington, Detroit, like, I think they should beat any of those teams. I would probably pick them to win that series, but I'm not taking it for granted. I can promise you right now, I'm going to say, last year, I predicted the Bruins to sweep the Panthers. Promise you right now, I'm not picking a sweep this year. I don't think this team has a sweep in them.
Did you learn your lesson?
No, I think that's exactly my point of view as well. I'm not all whoever they play is going to be really hard. We say, and I think that we learned that lesson so harshly last season that that's why I think this group is where they're at. That's why I think the a lot of the fan base is a lot of the like. This doesn't matter until April 18th. If they lose 10 in a row, win 10 in a row, lose 5, win 5, lose 8 shootout games, like it's all about game 1 and how they get through the first round, and that's how we're going to judge this group. Whether it's not it, they're not playing for anything other than that right now. That's my point of view as well. And so that's why I'm not concerned about a loss or not concerned about a win. They had to do a lot at the start of the season to prove that they could bounce back from last season and bounce back without Bergeron and Krejci. They've done all of that with flying colors, absolute flying colors. But now at this point, whether they're first, second, third, fifth, eighth in the conference, it's all about the first round, and they're not going to have a free pass at any point in the playoffs. I'm not looking past anybody. I don't think of course Philly's going to be easier than Toronto, and Toronto's going to be easier than New Rangers, and you could do all of that stuff, but none of it's going to be easy.
Yeah, that's really more what we're talking about. Like, who do you, we're just talking about matchups. Do you have a better team than Philly? Like, do you have a better team than Toronto? So, I mean, the Flyers, and they're probably not going to draw the Flyers in the first round. Like, it doesn't look like that's how it's going to line up right now. So, anyway, thank you for the comment. We have some other texts.
I will say quickly before we get to the next one, the one matchup I don't want to see in the first round is Tampa, which right now with the Rangers now moving into first in the conference, Rangers would get the second wildcard team. That would leave whoever wins the Atlantic between Bruins or Panthers to face Tampa in the first round. I'd rather just be second and face Toronto, you know, and maybe-
Tampa has Florida Panthers a la last season written all over them.
Yeah.
Florida
yeah.
Panthers get first. Tampa Bay goes in there. What a, like, that series is going to be nuts. But it goes to show that you can't place your playoffs. You can't set it up the way you want it. You can't have it fall perfectly. Like, it's such a crapshoot. And we saw it last season no more than any other season ever, right in our backyard, that we have to know that it's about getting in. And all of those cliches have to form to this group and this season more than ever because of what we've seen.
Were you ever on a team that tried to lose the last game or so of the regular season to draw a different opponent?
No. Well, no. We definitely in 04, we needed to win the last game to get Montreal. Otherwise, we would have gotten Toronto or Ottawa, where they had 105 points like us. And we lost. I played back to back that weekend, and that never would have happened. But we lost on Saturday to New Jersey when we could have clinched the division, and then we had to go back to New Jersey on Sunday to win the division. We ended up losing, like I said, I think it was 5-2 Saturday, and then we went and beat New Jersey 3-1 on Jersey Sunday afternoon to win the division. But we wanted to win that division because Joe was hurt, and we knew. It would have been really hard to beat Ottawa and or Toronto in that first round because they had basically the same amount of points. So I've never been in a position where you would lose. I've never heard anybody, coaches, GMs, players say, well, let's go out and lose this game. Like, no matter what, like, that wouldn't happen even if you kind of wanted to.
I only ask because this is a talking point that people bring up. Like, hey, do you really want to win this last game? Like, do you want to play Tampa? Or do you want to play Toronto?
That's guys still want to score goals and make saves. So, but that kind of makes
it
hard. You
could put in personnel that doesn't necessarily.
Well, sure,
like
you could, but those guys want to win and play too. You do that in exhibition all the preseason all the time. Oh, look at this lineup, and they go out and beat the regulars 5-1.
Those guys want to win a job.
That's right. Absolutely. Like at the end of the season, the guy's fighting for his dinner rather than just like 2 points.
All right, we gotta get to a break. Hour two of Sunday Skate coming up. Call in 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. We'll be back right after this.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.